40 years ago this week, disaster hit the Black Hills of South Dakota. We're taking a look this hour at the 1972 Black Hills flood.
Flash flooding struck large areas of the Black Hills, bringing death and destruction.
This is the story of the destruction wrought on one American community by clouds exactly like these.
Tonight, the floor of the White House said that about 300 workers from more than 30 federal agencies are assisting in relief operations for the victims of that flood.
Clouds that came silently and suddenly across the mountains and left behind, in a matter of hours, a city in grief.
As the search for its dead continued today, Rapid City began resuming the business of living.
4 decades later, Rapid City is back to living, but the town hasn't forgotten its past. The storms that brought the 1972 flood dropped up to 15 inches over parts of the Black Hills. 238 people died as streams along the eastern slope of the Black Hills roared out of their banks. It remains not only the worst disaster in South Dakota, but also among the most deadly flash floods in United States history. In addition to the human tragedy, the flood destroyed 1,300 homes and 5,000 automobiles. But to get a real understanding of this disaster, it's best to hear from those who witnessed the flood itself. Charles Michael Ray compiled this montage of voices of flood survivors.
At noon on June 9th, we took a departmental picture. And just about everybody came to the police department. I don't think we were only missing a couple of people. But it was a funny, funny day. Very humid, kind of gray sky. It was very warm, easy to sweat, but no air movement. It was an odd day.
I stopped at this one client's house who I'd had for a long time, who was blind. And when I went in, she said, "What's going on outside?" And I said, "You wouldn't believe the color of the sky. It's kind of a pea green. There's yellow and green, and they're all mixed together." And she said, "Something bad is going to happen."
When it started to rain, it was black.
Yeah.
And as you looked west, you know, towards out this direction, I mean, it was absolutely stunning how black it was.
And when we got home, the TV was on, and on the bottom they were scrolling possible heavy flooding along Rapid Creek.
The radio and TV was telling people to evacuate. A lot of them didn't evacuate. It was because the year before there had been several small flooding areas from some of the creeks in the west part of town. And so I think people weren't too concerned. They thought, well, it wasn't going to amount to much.
It was about 8 o'clock or something. The wind come up, and by then the whole hills were a solid wall of water. It just sat there. It wouldn't come off.
And the rain, instead of being raindrops, mm-hmm. was big sheets of water just coming down one after another, just these huge sheets.
Mm-hmm. Of course, it just kept getting darker and darker, and pretty soon then the electricity went off, and the phones were gone.
Right. Thermal pane windows we had, and the water was up on there about 6 inches. And we thought, well, that's no big deal. It'll go back down now. And just as we were standing there watching it, the water just started coming up on those windows. And it wasn't more than just a few minutes, and we were standing on our tiptoes looking out over the water. We got to thinking, you know, this isn't smart. We better get upstairs. So we went upstairs, and we no more than got to the top of the stairs, and a telephone pole came through one of those big windows. And 5 feet of water just came crashing into the house, you know, shook the whole place.
I looked off to the left. My brother was driving. And I saw this wall of murky, muddy red water coming down at us. I mean, coming down out of the canyon, whatever, I don't know. I don't even know why we could see it, other than it must have been lightning or something. But anyway, I quite literally told my brother to get the hell out of here. That's probably one of the first times my older brother ever did what I told him to do. He started to back up. The car ahead of us floated away, and I understand that guy died.
And I had a four-wheel drive, an old International Scout. And I said, well, let's take the Scout because it was a little higher profile and it was higher off the ground because the water was already running across our ankles and across our feet and partway up our leg across our yard. Got the family situated in the Scout and backed out of the driveway and then we're just a few feet to Jackson Boulevard and then and the bridge and took a left. Well, we didn't get across the bridge, and the first wall of water caught us.
You could not see anything at that point because it was just pitch black outside, unless some lightning would strike, and then that, it would just kind of light up the creek, and you'd
the
see.
The night was punctuated frequently with lightning, and yeah. That was kind of a godsend in a sense, because you had some idea of what was going on.
I felt the vehicle start floating, and then we had the engine cut out immediately. And then it spun us around, and we started to drift with the current.
I did see a frame house come down on the east side of our house and hit a big cottonwood tree and just explode. It just literally disintegrated right there on the spot. And I saw other objects float by at a good 20 miles an hour, not exaggerating.
All of a sudden, we were floating backwards and facing into the water and floating backwards, and all of a sudden we hit a hard jolt and found out, of course, later that we had wedged between some of those great giant cottonwood trees.
And at this point, I was starting to roll and somersault through the water and had my drowning experience. And I remember my father calling out to me, you know, and saying, you know, grab onto something. And what's so crazy and about all of that is that during all of this, there were trees and houses breaking up and other people in the water and other, I mean, there it was like I thought it was the end of the world.
The next thing we know, the water is right up to our necks. My first thought was I didn't know that I was going to die like this.
The sound was unbelievable, as loud as it was, just like a freight train running. You could hear those kids hollering for help and hear people in the trees hollering for help. And the fire truck was floating, and there was no way that we could get to them without drowning ourselves. We had no equipment to tie people to a rope or anything like that. And as the night went on, it got quieter, and they quit yelling. Some fell off, some fell out of the trees. And those that stayed on those houses were safe, as it turned out. The houses didn't leave the foundation.
But for some reason, immediately I let my feet float up across LeVon, who was sitting in the passenger side of the vehicle, and I put my feet against that window and just shoved it as hard as I could, and it dropped about that far. I did get my head through it, and I got the rest of my body through it, and I got up on top of the vehicle and stood in the top. This time the water is still right at the top of the vehicle. It hasn't covered it yet. So I'm up standing up on the cab, and I reach back into that open space to see if I can get a hold of anybody.
But I was beginning to think, well, I'm going to die, because he had left, and I didn't know where he was, and I started breathing in water. And I said, well, here I come, Lord. When he got a hold of my arm and pulled me out of there, it was so disappointing, because here I was going to this I knew, the wonderful place, heaven.
And so I reached back in there again and see if I can get anyone else, and I happened to grab the arm of our oldest daughter, Karen, the 14-year-old, and pulled her through this. She had in her arms, in the back seat, our little guy, Timothy, that was 2.5, and when I pulled her through that, she lost him. She couldn't. She lost her grip on him. I think I can probably insert at this point that Timothy was the last body that was found.
There was a young lady in there with a baby, and if I remember right, the baby was like a week old. And she said, would you carry this baby for me? Because as I remember, the water was about waist high. It was still pretty fast. So I took the baby, and we were walking out to the truck, and I think the mother was ahead of me, must have been, and I stepped in the hole and went underwater, baby and all. And I remember thinking, well, I'm not letting go. We're either making it together or we're going together. I said, but you're not. I'm not letting you go. I couldn't live with that. We bumped into something, or ground or whatever. I was able to get back up. It wasn't like it was 10 feet deep water, but it was fast. Anyway, we caught something. I finished walking over the truck, handed the baby over to the mother, and went back in and got more people. And that was an interesting thing.